6:15, Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. Glad to be with you on this Wednesday morning here on WWL. Keep the text coming on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line at 504-260-1870. Well, we welcome in Robert Hogan, professor and department chair of political science at LSU. Good morning, professor. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. President Trump pretty excited about announcing a new trade deal with Japan late last night that allows more U.S. goods into Japanese markets and lowers the tariffs on Japan to 15%. Your thoughts on that as the whole tariff back and forth continues with nation after nation around the globe?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that Trump promised many months ago, that he was going to renegotiate the trade deals the United States had with countries around the world in order to get a better deal for America. America was not getting the deal it should get. It was being cheated, as he often likes to say. And a lot of critics of the president have said it has taken a lot longer to make these trade deals as he had initially promised. And so he is able to come through and say, you know, at least on this country, there is in fact a trade deal in place, or is the framework of one that they're going to finalize in the coming weeks. It allows the president to say he's making progress. Of course, for Democrats and some of Trump's critics, even in his own party, are saying that this isn't happening quickly enough, and the concern is a lot of these really, really high tariffs that he imposed on countries might kick in and might be a drag on the economy if he doesn't, you know, act as swiftly as he needs to. So it's good news for the president, but probably not swift enough for those who are critical of him.
Yeah, he said overnight in a post on Truth Social that Japan will invest $550 billion in the U.S., and 90% of that will be profits for our country. He also said Japan will open their country to trade, including cars and trucks from America, rice, and other agricultural products. That's got to be exciting to the automakers and to the agricultural industry, because Japan is a huge market.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, having access to their markets is something that will help manufacturers here. I mean, the whole point of the tariffs is to make it where, it's people will want to do business with the United States, and it will make foreign goods less favorable for Americans to purchase. The whole point of the tariffs, I mean, he goes on and on about tariffs raising revenue. Of course, tariffs, they're imposed here in the United States, are really like taxes and are a drag on the economy, given that it affects consumers. A lot of what he's trying to achieve are long-term changes in what's going on. And so these are things that will probably, to the extent that they have benefits, it will be many years out before we actually are able to see those.
Yeah, you know, it's a risk-benefit analysis, I guess, and for many people, the pain is so intense here on the front end. Several reports now saying that major retailers like Amazon have cranked up prices 20 to 40% in line with the tariffs that have been placed on various countries around the globe by the Trump administration and by the president. But he is banking on the fact that ultimately this leads to lower prices, leads to more U.S. manufacturing, more foreign investment in the U.S., more U.S. jobs, and in the long run. But do Americans have the patience to wait it out while he goes nation to nation and tries to heavy-handedly force them to commit to better trade deals by threatening these huge tariffs?
No, absolutely. I mean, this is something that will take a large amount of time, and probably a lot longer than some people think. I mean, it's one thing to say we want to increase manufacturing in the country to produce goods that we sell abroad. It's another to actually have a company say, hey, this is something that's going to be profitable. We need to build a factory that builds these things. We need to hire workers. Those are things that take many years. And so if if these trade deals are meant to, if people are expecting these trade deals to immediately, with a the snap of a finger, to result in an economic blip on the gauge there, that is not what's going to happen. I mean, you're absolutely right. These are long term things that the president's putting in place, and it's going to take a long time to see any sort of benefit from that economically.
Yeah, it's not like the president says, hey, we can start selling cars and trucks in Japan now, and Detroit just suddenly opens a showroom in Japan and ships vehicles over there and starts selling them. They've got to be manufactured. They've got to be transported. There has to be an infrastructure for that. So it is detailed and time-consuming, and we shall see. We're talking with Robert Hogue, an LSU political science professor and chairman of the political science department, about the president and his popularity. When we get back, we'll talk about recent surveys on the president's popularity, as the surveyors saying that the president's lost significant numbers, but the White House pointing to the president being what they call the most popular Republican president in history within his party. What's the difference, and what does it all mean? We'll ask Professor Hogan that after we check on WWL traffic. We're under an extreme heat warning today, starting at 10 a.m., because the National Weather Service says conditions will create heat index values of up to 114. Already feels over 100 in several locations. But we also have heavy rain on the way. It's just off to our east, off the coast of Louisiana now, and that's going to continue with showers on and off today, tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, and probably wrapping up before Sunday. So we'll watch all of that for you here on WWL. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Tommy Tucker. Robert Hogan, the professor and the chairman of the political science department at LSU, is our guest. Professor, surveys out this week, polls of Americans showed that President Trump's approval rating has dipped about 10 points since February. But the White House says that's not a true illustration of what's happening, saying that 90 to 95% of Republicans still approve of the president, and they say that's what matters. They call him the most popular president with his party in American history. Tell us the difference between those two statistics and those two polling numbers we're seeing out there.
Yeah, I mean, what they're saying is I would not disagree with. I mean, it is true that he has great support within the Republican Party. I mean, regardless of what sort of issues face the president, even in the face of this Epstein scandal that is brewing, Republicans are staunchly supportive of the president. A lot of people like to say that Donald Trump has a low ceiling overall in terms of general popularity among the public overall, but has a high floor in that those Republicans are very supportive of him regardless of what happens. And indeed, if you look, over the past, ever since he's, coming back into office in his second term here, he has had generally low approval rating. Right now it's sitting, it's in negative territory in the sense that more people disapprove of him than approve of him overall. It's about 53-44, 53 disapprove, 44 approve. But you have, again, a high number of people who are Republicans, who identify as Republicans, who say they are supportive of him. The last 2 weeks, you've seen a bit of a dip. Some people think that may be in response to Epstein. And that's one of the reasons that the Epstein issue is so critical for Trump, and why we see him attempting to change the message in the way that he has. Some of his core supporters are people who are very much in the category of voters who believe in a lot of these conspiracy theories. A lot of them were motivated to take part in the election because they felt that there was a cabal in control of the government, in which pedophiles were controlling parts of the government. And, Trump promised to get to the bottom of this. And he keeps saying they're going to do that. And, of course, with the Epstein files, his unwillingness to release those, I think, has had some of those core supporters. I don't know if they've moved away from him yet, but they're getting a little softer than they were. And this is
So interesting that the opposition's coming from both hardcore Republicans and staunch Democrats. But he has been successful in getting Speaker of the House Mike Johnson to back off, and they just went on break from Congress without taking up the Epstein files. What happens next?
Well, I mean, the question is he able to change the subject before Congress comes back into session in September? It did sort of mute the ability of the opposition or those who are concerned about Epstein to bring up the issue, but it's not certain that that's going to be something that's going to be sustainable going forward.
All right. So all summer long, we're probably going to hear more on the Epstein case, and we'll see how it all plays out. Professor, thank you for joining us. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
I'm Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. Coming up next half hour, Scoot will join us to talk about the legacy of Ozzy Osbourne. He's played concerts here in New Orleans several times, and now he has left this world. What's his legacy going to be? We'll talk more about the death of Ozzy Osbourne after the news.